Good morning and welcome everyone. I would now like to turn today's call over to your host, Ms. Jean Ballant. Please go ahead.
Thank you very, very much, Lisa. Well, I'll officially welcome everyone to today's session. My name is Jean Ballant. I'm coming to you from the EPA's Technology, Innovation, and Field Services Division, where I'm here to help moderate an online seminar that's been sponsored by the EPA's Office of Research and Development. Our session today will look at the EPA study of the potential impacts of hydraulic fracturing on drinking water resources. Our primary presenter will be Jean Briskin, who's the Hydraulic Fracturing Research Coordinator from the Office of Science Policy and the Office of Research and Development. We're going to cover a couple of reminder items before we begin the technical portion for today's broadcast. So first of all, I just wanted to remind everybody that the entire session today is going to be offered online through an online meeting tool, Adobe Connect. When you registered for today's session, you would have been directed to a seminar homepage which had a description and overview for our session, contact information for both myself as well as our presenter, Jean Briskin, and then some additional resources related to the session. There also is a very important Go to Seminar button that you should see to the left on that homepage. And if you click that, you'll be able to identify yourself, check into the event, and actually join into the online broadcast in real time. For today's session, our presenters will actually be moving through the materials from their own locations, so our online participants simply need to sit back and watch as we give the materials through this online meeting tool. If you are simply dialing in by phone and are not in the online meeting portion of the broadcast, there may be some elements of the event that you won't be able to participate in. All phone line participants have been globally muted, so you won't be able to ask any questions on the phone lines. The only way to interact with our presenters live today will be to use the online portion of the broadcast and use a Q&A window, which I'll explain in just a moment. Again, by default, for all of our participants, when you signed up, you'll have an option to listen to the audio online. So hopefully all of you can actually hear me through your computer or mobile device. For those of you that chose or asked for a telephone line, we do have those lines open and available. They have been globally muted, so you will only be able to listen to our presenter on the phone lines. We would ask if you're on the telephone lines not to put the call on hold. If you need to, you can disconnect and dial back in at any time. For those of you that are listening to the online audio, if you have any problems with the volumes, if you're hearing echoes or any issues, the first thing I'd ask you to do is to take a look at your own local volume settings. You may need to locally change the settings on your speakers or actually go into your sound control panel on your computer or mobile device to boost the audio. Sometimes using a pair of headphones can help. If you continue to experience any problems with the online audio, simply use the Q&A window that appears in the lower right corner of our screen today and type up a message, and I'll be happy to share the call-in information with anyone who needs it. We're going to take questions electronically. So again, that Q&A window in the lower right corner is the only way you can submit a comment or question for today's session. We would encourage you to type up your comments or questions as soon as they occur to you. We'll go over how that works in just a moment. But those questions will basically be queued up throughout the presentation. And when we've gone through the technical content, our presenter will then go through the queue of questions and attempt to address as many of them as we can in real time. So again, don't wait till the end of the slide deck. Start typing them up as soon as they occur to you. And we'll try to queue up as many as we can to address today. If you're having any technical problems, you can also use that same Q&A window to report them. And we'll work with you to troubleshoot those issues. If you like the session that you're seeing today and you're interested in more free online trainings, we here at the Cleanup Information Network at EPA, or CLUIN, do this type of training all day, almost every day, 365 days a year. So I'd encourage you to take a look at some of our previously recorded sessions. You'll find about 500 of those sessions available for free replay on the CLUIN archive page. Here's just a quick screenshot reminding you what you're looking at. And I'm going to pull up my handy green arrow to point. So everybody should see a copy of the presentation materials here in the main portion of their screen. If you're having any difficulty seeing the slide, you find the fonts too small, each participant has the ability to click a full screen button on their own end. If you click that full screen button, it'll actually maximize the slides and make them larger. It won't impact anybody else's view. It's simply a personal enlargement button for you. If you want to turn that view off to type up a comment or question, simply click the full screen button again. So it's like a toggle switch. Click it once to turn it on, click it again to turn it off. And it'll bring you back into this view. You'll see a series of windows that appear to the right of those slides that will allow you to interact with our presenters today. The first being an EPA logo letting you know who sponsored the event. The second being a related URLs window, which shows you a collection of resources. Each participant can click on any one of these websites and then click the Browse To button to actually pull them up locally on their own end. The other thing, again, is that all-important Q&A window. You'll be able to type up your comments or questions here, click the little cartoon bubble, and actually privately submit them to myself and the other speakers. So nobody else will see your comments or questions. They just simply want to queue them up so we can get through as many of them as we can live and in real time. think that's the end of the official reminders I have for today's session. I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next slide, and I'll turn things over to our presenter again, Jean Briskin. Jean, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for our webinar today to talk about the EPA's progress report on our study of the potential impacts of hydraulic fracturing on drinking water resources. Today, I'll provide some background information regarding our study and then walk you through the various sections of the progress report and describe a bit about each of the different projects that we have underway to help us better understand the potential impacts of hydraulic fracturing on drinking water resources. I'll also talk about a reinvigorated stakeholder engagement process and in particular report out on some technical roundtable meetings which we held last November. Finally, there'll be an opportunity for you to answer, for you to ask questions, and we will attempt to answer as many of those as possible. So our study got started when Congress in 2010, when their Appropriations Committee asked us to study the potential relationship between hydraulic fracturing and drinking water resources using the best available science, independent sources of information, to use a transparent and peer-reviewed process, and also to undertake our work in consultation with others. A bit of a timeline here. After Congress asked us to conduct the study, we had intensive meetings with stakeholders across the country to learn about stakeholder concerns and also to help us formulate our study scope. We consulted with the Science Advisory Board twice, and the second time we sent them a draft of a study plan, which they peer-reviewed. We took into account their comments on our study plan and released a final study plan in November 2011. We also had a series of technical workshops in 2011 to help inform our research, and the technical workshops proceedings are available on our website. Our research is now underway, and in December we released our progress report. Right before that, we also had a series of technical roundtable meetings, which I will describe more later in this webinar, and we will follow up those technical roundtables with another series of technical workshops. We'll reconvene our roundtable participants to kind of summarize what we learned in the technical workshops to inform our research. And then we expect to release a draft report of results in very late 2014. That draft report of results will be sent to the Science Advisory Board for their peer review, and we expect to revise our report of results in response to their comments. There will also be opportunities for public engagement in providing us comments on the report of results as part of the peer review process. So our study is designed to help us answer the question of whether hydraulic fracturing may impact drinking water resources, and if so, what the driving factors affecting the severity and frequency of those impacts may be. Our progress report is intended to demonstrate the progress that we've made so far in undertaking the research, and we provide project-specific updates about the approach we're taking in the research, what the status of each project is, and the next step. Our report is organized, as you see here on slide 9, with chapters, starting with chapter 3, for the different types of research that we are undertaking. So we have analysis of existing data, modeling or scenario evaluations, laboratories, toxicity assessment, and case studies. In today's webinar, I'll talk about all of those topics, as well as talk about our quality assurance and peer review processes, which are covered in Chapter 8 of our progress report. And you can download a copy of the progress report at the website you see here, and there's a link in the related URLs button on your screen that you can get at that right away. So here, as a framework for our research, we have described our research in terms of the water cycle stages. And let me just walk you through them because it'll be vocabulary that will come up in the rest of the webinar. So in the case of water acquisition, here what we mean is taking water from groundwater, surface water, or from recycling of hydraulic fracturing wastewaters to use as source water for the hydraulic fracturing process. That water is brought on site and mixed with chemicals to form hydraulic fracturing fluids. That's the second stage of the water cycle in our study. Third stage is the actual fracturing process, where the fracturing fluids are injected down the oil and gas well, and the fracturing occurs. And then finally, when the pressure is released on the well, the wastewaters come back up to the surface as flowback and produced water and are stored temporarily in pits or tanks on site. The last stage is wastewater treatment and waste disposal, and that's where these wastewaters are taken off site for either treatment and recycling, treatment and discharge where that's allowed, or ultimate disposal, usually through underground injection control wells. So those are the five stages of the water cycle that are referred to throughout our study and in this presentation. So as you can see, each of these five stages of the water cycle has a primary research question associated with it. What are the potential impacts on drinking water resources of large volume water withdrawals from ground and surface waters to coincide with the water acquisition stage? For chemical mixing, the question is, what are the potential impacts on drinking water resources of surface spills on or near well pads of hydraulic fracturing fluids? And so on through each stage of the water cycle. So for each water cycle stage, we have the primary research questions that I gave you examples of on the previous slide, and then we have secondary research questions that are subsumed within those primary research questions. Our individual research projects are designed to answer one or more of these secondary research questions. And note that some research projects may be relevant to more than one water cycle stage. We then have grouped each of our research projects by the type of research that is being done, such as data analysis or laboratory work, and we call those groups research activities. So for the remainder of this webinar, what I'm going to do is take you through research activity by research activity, or chapter by chapter in our progress report, and give you a little bit of an update on the work that is underway. So first, for analysis of existing data, here we have five basic research projects underway. The first is a comprehensive literature review. The second is an analysis of data which have been compiled from FRAC Focus, which is a National Hydraulic Fracturing Chemical Registry. Third, we're looking at a selected state and a national database of spills to assess which spills might be associated with hydraulic fracturing fluids or wastewaters. Next, we have data which was provided to us by hydraulic fracturing service companies in response to an information request that we sent out. And then finally, we have information which was provided by 9 oil and gas well owner operators, also in response to an information request that we sent out. We found more than 12,000 well records that we've extracted information from FRAC Focus, and we're continuing to extract more information as that is entered into FRAC Focus. We're hoping to get at least a year's worth of data from states that have mandatory reporting into FRAC Focus to get a nice, robust cross-section. We have already begun pulling information from Colorado, New Mexico, and Pennsylvania state databases, and recently have enhanced our look, particularly in Wyoming, and we're pursuing a number of additional states as well. We're looking at the National Response Center spill database, and again, we're analyzing information provided by hydraulic fracturing service companies and oil and gas well owner operators. In the case of scenario evaluations, we have three basic modeling efforts underway. The first, to better understand the potential impacts of water withdrawals on drinking water resources, we're looking in two areas: the Upper Colorado River Basin, an arid area, and the Susquehanna River Basin, a humid area. In terms of subsurface modeling, we're doing numerical modeling of subsurface fluid migration scenarios to look at what under what situations there might be movement of gases or fluids from the fracture zone into drinking water aquifers or other impacts on drinking water aquifers associated with the underground injection portion of our water cycle. And then our third water modeling effort is on surface water modeling. And here we're looking at what the downstream concentrations of selected chemicals found at public drinking water supply intakes might be where those intakes are downstream from wastewater treatment facilities, which are discharging treated hydraulic fracturing wastewater. The status of our work so far is that we have selected the computer models that we're working with. We've constructed a series of realistic but hypothetical scenarios to evaluate. In the case of the water availability modeling, we have three sets of scenarios. One is a business as usual scenario, one which we hope represents full development of the oil and gas resources, and a third which looks at using maximum use of recycling and other types of green technologies to reduce the environmental footprint. In the case of the subsurface modeling, we have a set of scenarios which evaluate situations such as what if there is faulty well construction, or what might be the effects of having other wells operating nearby a particular well that's being hydraulically fractured, whether those nearby wells are other operating oil and gas wells or abandoned wells or drinking water wells. And we're also interested in whether there might be any effects of having nearby existing faults and fractures. In the case of surface water modeling, we're looking at scenarios which are based on real-life data from wastewater treatment facilities which are in operation in Pennsylvania, since that activity is still underway there. Our models are being run, and we're planning to conduct sensitivity analyses. In the area of laboratory studies, we have four basic projects. First, we're adapting existing analytical methods to make sure that they work effectively in some of the more difficult matrices that one encounters in the area of hydraulic fracturing, which have high total dissolved solids, for example. Second, we are doing what we call source apportionment studies. And here our goal is so that if somebody were to take a sample from a surface water body, for them to be able to tell whether or not that sample had been impacted by upstream discharge of wastewater, treated or otherwise, from hydraulic fracturing wastewater treatment. Our third area of laboratory studies is to understand the efficacy of standard wastewater treatment processes to remove chemicals found in hydraulic fracturing wastewaters. And lastly, in the laboratory, we're trying to better understand whether there are precursors to disinfection byproducts found in treated wastewater from hydraulic fracturing, which may then be found in drinking water intakes, which then when they disinfect their water for making finished drinking water, whether there's a potential creation of disinfection byproducts, and particularly brominated disinfection byproducts. So far, our progress is that we are adapting and testing improved analytical methods for materials including glycols, acrylamide, ethoxylated alcohols, radionuclides, and inorganic chemicals. We've obtained samples of surface water, hydraulic fracturing wastewaters, and treated effluents, and we're designing our wastewater treatability experiments and our experiments to better understand the potential for creation of brominated disinfection byproducts are underway. In terms of toxicity assessment, our first step was to identify chemicals which are known to have been used in hydraulic fracturing fluids or to have been found in hydraulic fracturing wastewaters. The sources of this information include information from hydraulic fracturing service companies, from oil and gas well owner operators, Frac Focus, and state and federal reports. We've spent a great deal of time coming up with unique chemical names and individual chemical abstract numbers, which are used to identify particular chemicals, as well as chemical structures to eliminate redundancies from having synonyms for a single chemical to be reported in the list. And that list is found in Appendix A of our progress report. It's important to note that the different sources of information for that Appendix A have different time periods associated with them. And so just because a chemical in that is listed in Appendix A does not mean that it is currently being used, only that it had been reported to have been used during the relevant time period. So for example, the information that we got from hydraulic fracturing service companies covered the time period of 2005 to 2009. And the Frac Focus sources would be a different time period. We are aware that some companies have chosen to, they've reported to us that they have discontinued use of certain chemicals, and they may be using new chemicals which have not yet been reported to us. So for these chemicals, we're in the process of compiling information on the chemical, physical, and toxicological properties. We're getting the chemical and physical properties from LeadScope, EpiSuite, and QuickProp. And our plan is to use the high quality toxicological properties from places, from states and federal databases such as IRIS and the State of California Toxicity Criteria Database. For chemicals where we have known structures but there's not been reported properties, our plan is to use quantitative structure activity relationships to make estimates of those properties. So far we've identified more than 1,000 chemical substances. We have unique chemical structures for about 750 of those chemicals, and we think that we have properties so far for over 300 of those chemical structures. Now I'm going to talk about our case studies. We have 5 retrospective case studies, and these are case studies that were selected based from a set of nominations made by stakeholders, where stakeholders had been concerned that their drinking water may have been impacted by hydraulic fracturing. And so the purpose of our case studies is to understand what constituents might be found in the drinking water and whether any of those constituents might be associated with hydraulic fracturing operations in the area. In picking our retrospective case studies, we strive to get a diversity of geographic areas, west and east, different plays, as well as different resources. So for example, in Colorado, our case study is a coal bed methane area in the Raton Basin. In North Dakota, the state of North Dakota asked us to work with them in investigating the potential impacts of a well blowout that occurred during hydraulic fracturing for oil in the Bakken Shale. In Pennsylvania, we have 2 case studies, one in western and one in eastern Pennsylvania. Both of those are places where people were concerned about their water quality in the wake of shale gas development in the Marcellus Shale. And then our last retrospective case study is a shale gas situation in the Barnett Shale. For each of these 5 retrospective case studies, we have completed 2 rounds of sampling, and that includes the analysis and the quality assurance quality control. And our plan is to post the results on our website over, in a number of weeks from now. We're continuing to do sampling, and we're working with our industry partners to design and initiate some prospective case studies, and that work is underway with those partners. So in conducting our research, we have an overarching quality management plan which identifies our quality assurance policies and procedures under which all of our research takes place. Each individual project is a has its own quality assurance project plan, and those are intended as internal planning documents meant for one scientist to talk to another scientist. However, we have made those quality assurance project plans available on our website at the website that you see here, and those documents are living documents, and we update them periodically as we learn information from our research to make sure that we're able to adapt to what we've learned in the field. The quality assurance makes sure that we get high quality information for assessment, and the peer review process makes sure that we draw reasonable and well-supported conclusions from that data. Our plan is that each of the different projects that I've described will have some type of a research report or paper written, and those will go, each one of them, under its own external peer review, either through submittal to a scientific journal or through a letter review or some type of an ad hoc panel. Once those peer reviews are completed, then we plan to synthesize those results into our report of results, which I mentioned we're targeting for having available at the end of December 2014. Our report of results is a highly influential scientific assessment, and as such, we're using the highest level of peer review available. That is, we'll ask our science advisory board to conduct a peer review, and there will be the opportunity for public input to that peer review then. So So to just review our timeline and next steps, our progress report came out late last month. We'll be briefing our science advisory board, we think, in about March regarding the progress report. Our research is underway, and we'll be conducting additional technical workshops this winter and spring. As the research comes to conclusion, as each individual project comes to conclusion, there'll be individual reports and papers that will become peer-reviewed. We'll then gather that set of results and write a draft report of results, which we are working to release in late 2014. Then we expect our science advisory board to peer-review that report of results with public input, and then we'll have a final report of results. Now I'd like to review our enhanced stakeholder engagement process. And I'll go through a number of steps here, including I'll talk about the Federal Register notice, which appeared in November, asking for data and papers for us to consider. I'll talk some more about the technical roundtables, which we held in November. Our progress report was released last month, and right now we're in this webinar where I'm talking about both the progress report and our technical roundtables. I'll provide some more information about technical workshops that we're planning to have this winter and spring, and the roundtables that will come after that. So our technical roundtables, we have one technical roundtable for each stage of the water cycle. And our purpose here was to have stakeholders from a variety of points of view do a couple of things. First of all, nominate topics for in-depth technical workshops. And second, to provide us with information to make sure that our research will be based on the most recent practices and information regarding hydraulic fracturing. We had a series of stakeholder groups that were present in our roundtable meetings, and the participants were nominated by overarching groups. So, for example, from state and local governments, we went to organizations such as the Association of State Drinking Water Administrators for drinking water folks, to the Interstate Oil and Gas Compact Commission, or Commerce Commissions for the oil and gas regulators at the state level. We went to the National Tribal Council for nominations for tribal representatives. From the oil and gas industry, API, the American Petroleum Institute, and America's Natural Gas Association nominated participants to our roundtables. From the water industry, the American Water Works Association and similar groups were consulted. At these roundtables, we had about 60 participants, and each stakeholder point of view also had observers in the room. Our materials that were used at the roundtables are currently available on our website at the website you see here on slide 22. And what I'd like to do now is kind of review from you the topics which were discussed in each of these technical roundtables. So starting with water acquisition, EPA provided an overview of the research which is in our progress report. And we talked about the importance of water availability and how is water used for hydraulic fracturing. There was interest regarding the models that we're doing to assess the impacts of that water use on drinking water resources. There was a discussion of what the various sources of water for hydraulic fracturing operations is, and there was some interest in what the potential impacts on public drinking water supplies might be, and the importance of recycling of flowback and produced waters on affecting the demands for water for hydraulic fracturing was also of interest. During the chemical mixing roundtable, we discussed the development of analytical methods. There was a discussion about what the trends in the use of chemicals might be and how could we know what those trends are. There was an interest in identifying what good indicator compounds might be. That is, because there are so many different chemicals in commerce generally and also used in hydraulic fracturing, are there a few that stand out that could be early indicators of the potential impacts of hydraulic fracturing on drinking water resources? And there was also some interest expressed in life cycle assessment during this roundtable. During the well injection roundtable, we talked about the influence and potential influence of well construction and operation on potential impacts on drinking water resources. There was interest in what the modeling assumptions and parameters and uncertainty assessments associated with the subsurface modeling that we're undertaking in the well injection research. During the flowback and produced water roundtable, we discussed the analysis that we're doing of databases regarding spills of hydraulic fracturing fluids as well as the wastewaters. We discussed our retrospective case studies during this session, and we learned about information on state databases of spills that may be available to us from Texas, Wyoming, Alabama, and other states. We also talked about the importance of having and what might be good monitoring strategies for indicator compounds. The last technical roundtable focused on wastewater treatment and waste disposal. And here EPA discussed our wastewater treatability studies. There was a discussion regarding what the residuals of wastewater treatment, whether that would be for recycling or for disposal, what might be in those residuals and how those are handled. We talked about what efforts were underway to validate the analytical methods which we're using in our disinfection byproduct studies. It was pointed out that there are regional differences in how wastewater is handled across the country. There was a great deal of interest in what the radioactive constituents of hydraulic fracturing wastewaters might be and how that can vary across the country, so going beyond the Marcellus Shale, for example. And then lastly, there was a discussion about how the wastewaters may be reused and either reinjected as part of fracturing fluids or for disposal. So that's an overview. What will also be posted on our website, in addition to the presentations, which are already posted, are short summaries of the discussion that go beyond the bullet points that are here on this slide. So one of the things that happened at our roundtables is that there were a number of topics that were nominated as topics for forthcoming technical workshops that we're planning to have. The first technical workshop will be about analytical chemistry methods, and that's going to be held February 25th in Research Triangle Park. The nomination opportunity for technical experts to participate in that is open until January 8th. Folks who are interested in participating, or if there are people that you would like to nominate to participate, there is a nomination process which is listed on our website. Basically, we're asking for subject matter experts to submit a resume, and if they're interested in making a short presentation, to provide an abstract about what they would like to talk about. We will have registration opening for the remaining workshops in January, later this month. We're looking for having four additional workshops over the course of April and June. One would be on well construction and operation and how to interpret that in the context of potential impacts to drinking water resources, as well as covering subsurface modeling. The second additional workshop would be on wastewater treatment and modeling of surface water discharges. The third technical workshop beyond analytical chemical methods would be regarding the modeling that we're doing for water acquisition. And then the last one would be regarding case studies. So if you are or you know of subject matter experts that would be good contributors to a discussion, we encourage you to have those folks submit resumes and abstracts for consideration and participation. And all of the materials and discussions that will be held at these technical workshops will be both posted on our website afterwards, and we will have webinars after each technical workshop to report out what the discussion was like for folks that weren't able to participate in person. So in summary, after each of the technical workshops and roundtables, we will have webinars much like this one so that folks can understand what was happening. Our information request, which was a Federal Register notice, which appeared in November, we are soliciting folks to send us data and studies for us to consider as part of our research. We have a strong preference for peer-reviewed studies and for data with known, well-documented quality assurance information. The website where the Federal Register notice is showing on your screen now, and there are instructions on that website about how to submit your suggested data and papers. Again, our website will be the will continue to be the place where you can go to get information about the study. That's where we'll post our briefings. And you can sign up to get email updates. So when there are major announcements or new documents posted, you'll get an email through a listserv so that you don't have to work on our website every day. You can just go there when you get the notice that there's a significant update.
Just a couple of final statements, and then go ahead and close out today's session. Again, this is Jean Ballant with EPA's Technology Innovation and Field Services Division. I, too, would like to thank everyone who was able to join us from all over the United States for today's session. Again, if you found today's session to be valuable, we do training and sessions like this online through the Cleanup Information Network almost every day. So I'd encourage you to visit our website at cluin.org, or you can also find us on popular social media and professional networking sites like Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter. We'd encourage you to connect with us there to stay alert to the newest resources as soon as we have them available. The other thing I want to remind everybody, again, there are a number of websites and resources that are available right now in the window or pod to the right of the slides under the related URLs title. While you can click those and browse those open now, you'll also find those very same resources hyperlinked on the seminar homepage. So if you go to the seminar homepage, which is what you would have seen when you signed up, there'll be a page or a collection of links or resources, and you can find these websites at any time. They'll be available to you 24/7. Another thing I'd ask you to do is just take a moment to fill out a short feedback form to let us know what you thought of today's session. Again, that link is available in the URLs pod, but you'll find it on the seminar homepage as well. It does take just a minute or two to fill it out, and I do read each and every one of the responses that are submitted. If you can fill out that feedback form and you're looking for confirmation of your participation today, when you go to the feedback form, there's a box you can check and actually have a confirmation message sent to you for your own records. Just make sure that your email address has been entered correctly to get that message. If you shared the line with multiple participants, each individual can fill out their own feedback form and actually get their own confirmation message. So if you're looking to get credit or verification, you may find that your registration email, a copy of the presentation materials, as well as this confirmation message is enough to get credit with your accrediting institution. Again, thank you all so very much for joining us today. Again, I hope you found this to be a valuable expenditure of your time and that we'll either see you or hear from you on a future CLUIN seminar. This will be the formal conclusion for today's session. Thank you very much, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.